Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1335. Conversations with Monty. This is conversation number 9. This is being recorded on July 13th of the year 2024. And once again, it is both my pleasure and my privilege and my honor, actually, to present once again my co-host, Monty, who will continue to unpack research that he's done that will indicate to us the sweep of history rather than approaching historical events like it was a piece of glass or a mirror that got broken and we have all these unconnected shards of glass, but actually they're not unconnected shards at all. So once again, Monty, welcome back to our airwaves.
Thank you, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay. Now, when we were speaking last, we were talking about the programs that on the one hand were related to Lee Harvey Oswald and his return to the U.S. when he and Marina were met by Spaz Rakin
Correct.
The Travelers Aid Bureau, I believe, and also the Secretary General of the American Friends of the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations. And as we have seen, Rakin himself had strong connections to the CIA and had been recruited to serve in some of the interrogation programs in Greece that were related to the MK Ultra program as well. Furthermore, we've been looking at institutional connections between the DRE and the milieu of the OUNB, the prologue and aerodynamic milieu, and the Helsinki Socialist Youth Conference in the early 60s. I can't remember if that was 61 or 62.
That was the Helsinki, Finland, 1962 World Federation of Democratic Youth, United Union of Students, and the affiliate was the 8th World Festival of Youth and Students in Helsinki. It was actually a joint workers, and you are correct, Socialist Anti-War Committee that had a large meeting in Helsinki, Finland of May of 1962.
Alrighty, and among the people that was present and making her presence so was Gloria Steinem, arguably the best known and most influential American feminist. I'm going to begin, Monty, with something that I mentioned last week, 2 weeks ago. I don't want to be misunderstood when speaking about Steinem or about the women's movement as conflating women's rights with the women's movement. Obviously, they are not dissociated, but I differentiate most emphatically between the rights of women and the women's movement. Napoleon had a principle that he operated on when he wanted to make sure that an order that he gave was not misunderstood. He gave the order in such a way as to pretend that he was addressing an idiot. And if the person to whom he was giving the order didn't get it, then he would have them shot, which I'm really not in a position to do. But decades of talk radio have made me very aware of the difference between what I say and what people hear. So I'm going to repeat 3 times. I differentiate most emphatically between women's rights, the rights of women, which I emphatically support, and the women's movement, which is a political movement that has strong links to the CIA. Take 2. I differentiate most emphatically between women's rights and the women's movement, which is a political phenomenon that is inextricably linked with the CIA. Take 3. I differentiate emphatically with a capital E between women's rights and the rights of women, which I wholeheartedly support, and the women's movement, which has very strong links to the CIA. And Gloria Steinem is obviously part of the women's movement. And as we saw in our last talk, and as we will continue, she was one of the major participants in the Helsinki Youth Conference. And some of the other elements that were making their presence felt at that conference were about as far from what people think about with regard to women's rights as anything that comes to mind offhand. Elements like the OUNB Prologue, Mikola Lebed, and institutions that are antithetical to human rights, antithetical to the successful development of society or any group within it. And so with that characteristically worthy introduction, Monty, and hopefully I won't be misunderstood now, the show is yours. So talking about that conference and how it was disrupted, who did the disrupting, and what was the institutional significance, or what were the institutional significance of those various entities?
Thank you for the introduction, and I have to agree with you on all three points. There were one point as a singular. Yes, when Dave Emery and I talk about somebody like Gloria Steinem, we have to recognize that she was, in fact, a Cold War propagandist, you know, and she knew that her funding conduits were coming directly from the Central Intelligence Agency. This is documented. It was documented in 1967 in the Washington Post. And I'll, in fact, share that information when it becomes pertinent later in the broadcast. But I'd like to pivot forward to 2022, if I may, for a moment. October 22nd, correction, 2021, October 22nd, 2021, Mr. Emery, if I may, for a moment.
Absolutely. What? Tell us about the significance of that date.
Well, that was a date that the White House released their, quote, the memoranda for the heads of executive departments and agencies on the temporary certification regarding the disclosure of information in certain records related to the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. And this was released. This is an official statement from the White House briefing room. It can, in fact, be looked up on the White House's whitehouse.gov website under that title. And I'd like to move forward to section, section 3 of that document, talking about temporary certification. And I would like the listening audience to bear in mind what has been going on in the Ukraine for the past 3 or 4 years. When I quote this section. So this is section 3 of the White House's official memoranda released in October 22nd of 2021 regarding the release of documents pertaining to the murder of President Kennedy. So I'm going to quote it in its entirety. Quote, section 3, temporary certification. In light of the agency's proposals for continued postponement under the statutory standard, the archivist's request for an extension of time to engage with the agencies and the need for an appropriate review and disclosure process, I agree with the archivist's recommendation. Bear in mind, the I that is being referenced here is the President of the United States of America, Joseph Robinette Biden. Continuing, quote, temporary continued postponement is necessary to protect against identifiable harm to military defense, intelligence operations, law enforcement, or the conduct of foreign relations that is of such gravity that it outweighs the public interest in immediate disclosure. End quote.
And what they're talking about here is an event that took place almost 60 years previous to the date of that document.
I'll quote that small portion again. Postponement is necessary. Bear in mind, this is a president of the United States of America, the current president, President Biden. These are his words through this White House statement. I'll quote it again. Postponement, meaning postponement of documents regarding to the murder of President Kennedy, is necessary to protect against identifiable harm to military defense, intelligence operations, law enforcement, or the conduct of foreign relations that is of such gravity that it outweighs the public interest in immediate disclosure, end quote. That last part, conduct of foreign relations, is what we're going to be talking about in today's program. And once again, I would address your listening audience, Mr. Emery, in reference to Ukrainian intelligence activities. What is of such paramount interest that it supersedes the rights of the American public, meaning the taxpayer of the United States of America, that we cannot know the full graphic details regarding the murder of the President of the United States of America? And I'm here to demonstrate today to your listening audience that this has everything to do with combat operations in Ukraine, specifically covert operations, and even more specific, ratline ops. How exactly are covert operators getting behind enemy lines? This is what we're going to be talking about today.
By the way, Murphy, the term ratline, we previously used that primarily to characterize networks that were used for the exfiltration of operatives from, say, Europe to Latin America or something like that. It also, however, can refer to networks that are used to infiltrate agents into a particular organization or milieu, and that's what we're talking about here.
Right, and I would put a special emphasis on this. The phraseology has little or no difference when it comes to the parapolitics surrounding Ukrainian fascists, specifically an organization called the OUN, the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, because as I'm going to demonstrate, the exact same rat lines that were used to pull Nazi intelligence out of the Soviet orbit and the immediate aftermath of the Second World War, these exact same rat lines were being utilized in 1962 to place American operatives behind enemy lines. The exact same function of these fascist World War II era Nazi Ukrainian rat lines. And this is how an organization called the Directorio Revolucionario Estudiante, or the DRE, in English, the Student Revolutionary Directorate, how they got their operatives into Helsinki, Finland, for the 8th World Youth Festival in 1962, of which Gloria Steinem was an attendee as a CIA functionary.
And by the way, that is discussed in the book The Pied Piper by Richard Cummings. In other words, Steinem, the CIA, and Helsinki. Go ahead, Monty.
There's also an updated source on that. It's a book put out by London Bloomsbury Publishing, and the author is Joy James, last name spelled J-A-M-E-S. And the book is called Contextualizing Angela Davis, The Agency and Identity of an Icon. And in there, it demonstrates that Gloria Steinem was, in fact, a full-fledged CIA propagandist working for an organization called Red Cap. And we'll get into that in a minute, what Red Cap represents. But her task primarily, talking about Steinem at the World Federation of Democratic Youth and the 8th World Festival of Youth and Students at Helsinki, her primary function there was to act as a CIA propagandist to essentially assure the communist and socialist workers organizations that were present that all of the reports that were coming out of the U.S. liberal mass media about Black Americans being lynched or beaten or raped or, you know, eaten up by police dogs, or Klansmen being protected by the FBI. These were, in fact, false narratives being put out by communists in the United States. So Gloria Steinem's presence, according to the book, Contextualizing Angela Davis and the Agency of Identity of an Icon, once again put out in 2024 by James Joy and Bloomberry Publishing, and this is on page 33, I should note, on the first edition of this, her job infiltrating the 8th World Youth Festival in Helsinki in 1962 was, in fact, to act as a propagandist disputing factual stories of Klansmen being protected by the FBI and black people being lynched by officialdom in the American South. I mean, bear that in mind about Steinem and her mission, yeah? And what it is representational of. She was, in fact, a CIA propagandist protecting domestic fascists, okay?
And something to remember, at the same time as this was going on, the DRE, or elements thereof, were moving in the orbit in New Orleans with Guy Bannister and his, quote, detective agency, unquote, which appears to have been functioning not only as an intelligence front, but as something of a fusion center for what appears to have been an American Gladio or stay-behind operation, where elements of the very same, you know, American Nazi Party, Minutemen, Ku Klux Klan, National States Rights Party, were all working in conjunction with, not coterminous with, but in conjunction with, and at the behest of, in some cases, the intelligence community.
Correct. So Gloria Steinem's presence at the 8th World Youth Festival of Students, her presence at the 8th World Festival of Youth and Students in Helsinki, Finland in 1962 as a propagandist, you know, discounting stories of far-right activists in the American South is, in a sense, actually strike that, not in a sense, it is a direct function of the propaganda effort overseas to protect the infrastructure of an organization such as William Guy Bannister's 544 Camp Street Anti-Communist Legion of the Caribbean operations, which in fact overlapped with Alpha 66 terrorists, elements of CNAF, and of course the DRE. To give a little bit of background to the DRE and what exactly it represented, in one sense, it was a college organizing, political action group. But that was just simply the cover story, as it were. In one sense, or I should say the way the CIA places it, in a CIA memorandum, which let me see if I can't pull that up here real quick. Okay, so this is a CIA memoranda that is a cross-reference with the Assistant Attorney General for Internal Security Division of the Department of Justice, a man by the name of J. Walter Yeagley. And this document was put out in 9 January 1963, and this is how he describes, as a Justice Department official in 1963, what the DRE represented. So, quote, and this is Yeagley speaking, once again, a Department of Justice official, "Perhaps the most militant and deeply motivated out of all of the Cuban exile organizations seeking to oust Castro after the Cuban Revolution in 1959. Accordingly, in a CIA report in 1962, the DRE has the largest following of any individual exile group. The group, formed by Alberto Mueller, Ernesto Travisto, Juan Manuel Savant, the young Catholic students at the University of Havana in February of 1960. They protested the visit of Andreas Mikrona, the Soviet deputy foreign minister. They battled with pro-Castro activists near the statue of Jose Martina in Havana's Parque Central. Later that spring in 1960, they were expelled from the University of Havana in hearings presided over by Castro's campus enforcer, Rolando Cubella." I should note that by 1963, Rolando Cubella was a full-fledged CIA operative and an assassin that was a part of the CIA's AMLASH operations, which were actually based out of Madrid, of all places. And Madrid, Spain, was the headquarters of the CIA's secret assassination program to kill Fidel Castro in 1963. And that's in keeping with the information that we've presented before about the Falange. Continuing with the State Department report from Yigi. In Miami, the DRE in exile quickly attracted the support of the CIA's covert operations officers such as David Phillips and Howard Hunt and George Ioannidis. In early 1961, Mueller had been a commander of Castro's 26th of July movement, returned to the island to organize peasants in the Escambay Mountains to resist new communist government. Mueller, an intelligent and charismatic young man, attracted a small following but was arrested by Castro's security forces at a bus stop just before the exiles aborted invasion at the Bay of Pigs. He would spend the next 20 years in jail. In August 1962, Savak led a group of DRE militants from a small boat in Miami to Havana to launch maritime nighttime raids in Jorando de Jorritas Hotel, located in the beach south of the west of Havana. Savak and company sprayed the hotel with 20-millimeter cannon fire, terrorizing the residents, mostly advisors from Eastern European countries to include Finland, but otherwise doing no damage. The DRE denied it was an assassination attempt. The group's leaders also passed along reports of Soviet missile installations in Cuba to the CIA in summer of 1962. When these reports were confirmed by photographs of U.S. reconnaissance planes, the Cuban missile crisis resulted. After the missile crisis, the group's claims that the old Soviet Union had not removed all of its missiles but had stashed some away in caves won headlines but were soon discredited by the CIA. In August of 1963, the group's delegation in New Orleans had a series of encounters with a purported pro-Castro activist named Lee Harvey Oswald. After the murder of President Kennedy, yes, Dave, I'm sorry.
Yeah, one of the things about the Cuban Missile Crisis and Oswald, one of the many curious things he was able to do after coming back from the Soviet Union and being met by Stas Rieken was to go for work for Jagger Child Stovall. And among the things that they did for the National Security Establishment was hoping to process the reconnaissance photography of aircraft with regard to the presence of Soviet missiles in Cuba. So, I mean, the notion that, a communist or a Marxist-Leninist or a turncoat or whatever would be allowed into that kind of an intelligence environment is beyond, you know, beyond realistic acceptance. I mean, it's just absolute an absolute indication that Oswald was an inside player.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm glad you pointed it out because it has to be seen through the looking glass, as it were, that DRE ratline operatives were, in fact, the men that were bringing back the raw technical information indicating that Soviet ICBMs were present in Cuba. And here we have Mr. Oswald, who did in fact have an encounter with the DRE affiliates, specifically a man by the name of Carlos Bringuier, who represented the DRE activities in New Orleans. And we now know from CIA documentation pertaining to Bringuier's handler, a man by the name of Carl Trenton, last name spelled T-R-E-T-T-I-N, who was the head of counterintelligence for the CIA in New Orleans concerning the anti-Castro effort. We know that, Carlos Bringuier was, in fact, the chief of propaganda for the CIA's anti-Castro operations, which were, in fact, overseen by at the time, the deputy director of paramilitary and psychological warfare for the CIA's JM Wave Station, a man by the name of George Ioannidis. So, structurally speaking, when you talk about the DRE's liaison or, in effect, a false flag confrontation with Mr. Oswald, you're looking at one and the same. You know, Mr. Oswald working for Jagger Child Stovall, producing maps of locations of these ICBMs, and of course the DRE's Ratline activities, pulling the raw technical information out of Cuba. Continuing with the CIA, or excuse me, with the State Department report from Yagi. By 1963-64, the group's membership was declining along with the organizational effectiveness. The DRE was formally disbanded in December 1966 by its co-founder, Juan Manuel Salvat, who is now director of the publishing house Universal Editions in Miami. Incidentally enough, half of the cadre of the DRE in 1966 later joined an organization called the Cuban American National Foundation, or CANAF, which was a wing of the Latin American branch of the World Anti-Communist League. And the president of CANAF was Jorge Mas Casanasa, last name spelled as C-A-N-O-S-A. And he was one of the founding members not only of Brigade 2506, but he was also a functionary at Panama's Fort Gulick in 1959, where he was a member of the original 40 Op 40 assassins that were set up to murder Fidel Castro. So there is, in fact, a function to the continuity of the DRE before it is even an organization in 1959 to the CIA's assassination operations, in this case, Operation 40. And then later in 1966 to the World Anti-Communist League. Yeah. So this is the continuity, as it were, of the DRE's operations. And, you know, in effect, what they were doing in this time period of, the 1962 Eighth World Youth Festival of Youth and Students in Helsinki was, in fact, acting as a functionary, not only surveillance rat line entity for the CIA's anti-Castro operations, but they were, in fact, agents provocateurs and assassins for the CIA's not only international operations, but their domestic intelligence apparatus. Okay? And this is where we find the DRE in 1962. Ultimately, the information for this, I'm going to be quoting directly from CIA documents. If I may, Mr. Emery, I'm going to give the not only will there be links inside of the description and Spitfire list, but I'm going to go ahead and quote directly from a CIA document memoranda, and the memoranda number is as follows, 104-10, reading again, this is a memoranda 104-10171-10043. Okay, so that's 104-10171-10043. And this document is dated 28 August 1962. Memorandum for the record, anti-Castro Cuban activities at the Eighth World Youth Festival. And if I may quote it in its entirety, Mr. Emery.
Absolutely. And also bear in mind very quickly that the aforementioned George Joan Mibes was also the liaison between the House Select Committee on Assassinations and the CIA, which places Biden's remarks of October 22nd of 2021 in stark relief.
Correct. So reading once again, this is a CIA memorandum for the record, 28 August 1962. Quote, this memorandum will continue to outline the activities of anti-Castro Cuban delegation that the CIA sent to Helsinki for the 8th World Youth Festival, 29 July, 6th August 1962. The delegation was sponsored overtly by the Directorio Revolucionario Estudiante, DRE, and consisted of 9 members. Its mission was to nullify the effect of Castroite Cuban delegation on the festival and to seek to persuade likely defectors from that delegation. That last part is of supreme importance, pulling defectors out of the delegation. Continuing with the memoranda. On the opening day of the festival, as delegations paraded through the streets to the stadium, 5 DRE delegates unfurled a banner in front of the Cuban delegation demanding that Castro free his thousands of political prisoners. Reports vary on the actual text of the banner. The Cuban delegation broke ranks from the parade and attacked the DRE members, pushing them backward into the crowd of Finnish spectators. The Finns rallied to aid the DRE members, and a general melee followed, much to the later embarrassment of the Cuban delegation and the festival sponsors. This incident was unrelated to the Finnish rioting that followed for 3 days after the festival opening, but it is likely that the incident helped to exacerbate the anti-communist tension caused by the rioting. Apparently, with this view, Finnish police picked up two of the DRE members and questioned them. After releasing them, the police sought the two again. Unfortunately, the two DRE members happened to be riding in a car that collided with a police car on the night of 1 August. The two were jailed overnight and released the next day with the suggestion that they leave Finland as soon as they could. Accordingly, the whole DRE delegation left on 2 August 1962 to go to Germany to attend a German Christian Democratic youth meeting. The CIA station in Berlin reported that the DRE's group's presence at the festival was effective. Signed, Gabriel Lowe, Chief of Task Force W's Paramilitary and Propaganda Activities, end quote. Now, I realize that's a lot to unpack, but ultimately, with this CIA document, Mr. Emery, what we have here demonstrates that not only was the CIA sending armed terrorists to the Eighth World Youth Student Festival in Helsinki in 1962, but they were in fact protected by the Finnish intelligence services, and they exfiltrated into Germany, of all places, in order to escape the wrath of Finnish communists. And the CIA station in Berlin reported on the DRE's presence directly to the chief of Task Force W's paramilitary and propaganda operations. So here we can see that there was a pre-existing rat line that the DRE utilized not only to get into Finland, but to exfiltrate into Germany of all places.
That is really fascinating. And one of the things, Barney Frank, the former congressman from Massachusetts, who was also working at that Helsinki conference, apparently for CIA, hinted, if I understand the gist of his remarks, he kind of hinted that Gloria Steinem was using her considerable female charms, shall we say, to win over some of the targeted delegates to the American cause. So that's an interesting footnote to Steinem's subsequent activities.
Right. I don't know what else to add other than say that that's absolutely correct. It's very disturbing, pivoting back to Steinem, and I'm quoting directly from the Washington Post Times Herald of 1967. This was an article written by Robert G. Kaiser, who was the Washington Post staffed editor at the time. And this is from an article called "The Work of the CIA with Youth at Festival is Defended." And if I may quote it in its entirety.
Absolutely.
Gloria Steinem, a New York freelance writer, acknowledged in an interview yesterday that she worked closely with the Central Intelligence Agency to organize groups of American young people to attend the World Youth Festivals in Vienna and Helsinki in 1959 and 1962. She strongly defended her actions and had great praise for CIA agents with whom she collaborated. This is Gloria Steinem speaking, quote, "I found them liberal and far-sighted and open to exchange ideas," she said. "I never felt I was being dictated to at all." Miss Steinem was director of the Independent Research Service, a group that sponsored the trips of several hundred young Americans to Vienna and Helsinki. I should make an editorial note here, Mr. Emery, that those several hundred American students included the DRE delegates, meaning that Gloria Steinem helped the DRE get into Helsinki in 1962. Continuing. Its activities have been financed by a number of foundations, including the Independence Foundation of Boston, already cited by the National Student Association as a conduit of CIA funds. Continuing, first emission. This was the first emission by anyone connected to the research service that had collaborated with the CIA. Miss Steinem said yesterday that she worked extensively with CIA agents in this country and at the two youth festivals. She said that the budget for the research service activities at the Helsinki Festival was more than $100,000. She declined to say how much of that money was CIA. Several hundred young Americans went to the Helsinki with the research service aid offer as an alternative to the communist line of the festival. The research service also helped pay for the daily newspaper put out by three languages during the festival by a largely American staff, but under the ultimate control of a Finnish editor. I should note that once again, the research service aid operations to Helsinki included the DRE delegates, the terrorists that were made reference to a few moments ago in the CIA document. Continuing with the Washington Post article, all controlled by Reds. There have been 8 World Youth Festivals since World War II. The first 6 were held behind the Iron Curtain. They have all been controlled by communists. Ms. Steinem said yesterday that, quote, almost none, end quote, of the people who went to Vienna or Helsinki with the research service knew that the CIA was helping to pay for their trip. She also said that no member of either research service delegation has passed information to the CIA. Quote, we only plan the best way to operate, she said. Quote, they wanted to do what we wanted to do, which was to present the healthy, diverse view of the United States, end quote. As an editorial, once again, Mr. Emery, I suppose that healthy, diverse view included acts of terrorism and staging street fights,
What's really interesting is to think about what was going on in the U.S. with regard to the civil rights movement, including the hate bus generated by George Lincoln Rockwell and some of the people in and around the orbit of 544 Camp Street, 531 Lafayette Place. And propaganda really is front and center here. And, as someone that grew up in this time period, I recall that Gloria Steinem was like 90 years old now, so she's well on in years. But I recall many pictures of her. I mean, the internet now has been scrubbed pretty thoroughly, but a lot of the pictures of Gloria Steinem that were publicized have her wearing a miniskirt and nylons. And of course, there's nothing at all wrong, and it's absolutely to be expected that a woman would not want to be sexually objectified. However, wearing a miniskirt and nylons is not the way to go about that. The miniskirt makes it so that, it makes it so that women can't sit down and men can't stand up, you know? And what I wonder is, to what extent, and this is an open question, was some of that meant to create, basically a binary psychological dilemma, basically cognitive dissonance at the time. Again, it's an open question. I don't know. But at the time, as a young man and incredibly naive, it had me scratching my head. And now, much older and I'd like to think wiser, I'm wondering if that maybe was the idea, was to get a whole lot of men, confused and confused. So, that is something that's worth keeping in mind at the same time that this is going on.
Certainly. And as a young man myself, I just want to say this much. I have no problem with women being liberated, but at what expense does an individual who identifies as a female liberate their womanhood to be they themselves identified as on equal footing with a man. I mean, it's a very disturbing argument. And I would have to agree that in keeping with the CIA's MKUltra behavior modification techniques, confusion certainly is a very effective technique to keep people off the mark, as it were. Okay. So with that much said, I will continue with the Washington Post Times Herald article, if I may.
Yes, just one. I want to add just one thing. The same people that crafted the Equal Rights Amendment, which has yet to pass, by the way, they know full well that women can do a job as well as a man. At the same time, if the prevailing climate can be maintained where, well, you don't have to pay a woman as much, it makes for greater corporate profits. So there's something to think about.
Well, but beyond that, with corporate profits, if I may just comment on the military-industrial complex, the Project 2025 operations certainly are gearing towards the idea of bringing back a military draft and a selective service environment. So I suppose, in a very cynical sense, women are about to be on equal footing with men because all that that implies, you know, all that that implies, let your imagination wander. Women yeah. being on the draft, yeah.
it will be interesting to see. It will. We'll find out.
And as a United States Army combat veteran, I just want to say this much. So be it. You know, I mean, I do not advocate war. Having participated in a war, it should be the last resort beyond the last resort. But there it is. Continuing with the Washington Post Times and Herald article, this is once again talking about Gloria Steinem. She, meaning Steinem, said the research service was started without CIA funds, but that the agency approached her soon after the organization was set up and offered to help. Now, once again, as an editorial to this, what is being said in this article, Mr. Emery and listening audience, I find that very disturbing because this is Steinem in 1967 essentially stating that she is the CIA's main conduit into the infiltration activities of the World Youth Festival activities. I mean, she all but admitted it. I will read it again. She, meaning Steinem, said that the research service was started without CIA funds, but that the agency approached her soon after the organization was set up and offered to help. Quote, this is Steinem speaking again. Quote, the CIA was the only one with enough guts and foresight to see that the youth and the student affairs were important, she said. End quote. She first decided that youth politics were important during a two-year visit to India after graduating Phi Beta Kappa at Smith College in 1956. At the Helsinki Festival in 1962, Ms. Steinem was the co-director of the research service with Dennis Shaul, last name spelled S-H-A-U-L, former president of the National Student Association. Shaul, now a lawyer in Arkin, Ohio, said the Washington Post yesterday that he knew the CIA money was helping to finance the research services. This is Shaw speaking, quote, there was always legitimate money involved too, Shaw said. To this day, I don't know how much the CIA money was there, end quote. Shaw said of the research service delegation that his only job was to, quote, bring together a group of young people who were representative of America, end quote. And once again, as another editorial to this article, is Mr. Dennis Shaw also referring to the DRE terrorists that were brought in with Gloria Steinem? Is that representational of the youth of America? Continuing, this is Shaw once again speaking. Quote, we had Minnesota school teachers who were farther right than William F. Buckley, Shaw said, as well as members of the Students for a Democratic Society. Nobody told them what to say. That's a very interesting omission by Mr. Shaw. I should note that he knew that there were far right elements that were present in the Eighth World Youth Festival Research Association, National Student Association operations controlled by Steinem. Continuing, Shaw also insisted that no research service reports had been given to the CIA. He said that only very few of the people involved in the research service knew anything about the CIA connection. "I am not at all apologetic or ashamed of what I did," Shaw said. "The Helsinki Festival was a disaster from there, the communist world's point of view, and I think we can take a good deal of credit for that," end quote. I don't think I need to comment any further on that, Mr. Emery. Clearly, Gloria Steinem and Mr. Dennis Shaw, these two CIA-backed conduits into the Helsinki World Youth Festival, clearly these two persons had no problem with the terrorist activities of the DRE, bearing in mind Gloria Steinem's whole presence there was to discount the idea that black people were being terrorized and lynched by American policemen and Ku Klux Klansmen in the American South. That was her whole purpose at the 8th World Festival of Youth and Students in Helsinki in 1962. She was a full-fledged CIA operative, and she was aware of the DRE delegates' presence. End of story.
And basically what she was doing was being an accessory after the fact, in effect. I mean, I don't know the legal, the legal statutes precisely, but in effect.
Real quick, if I may, I believe the legal statute, and this is actual legal terminology, the statute of which that we could in fact charge her as an international war criminal, because she is in fact engaging in paramilitary operations, is culpable indifference. And that's actual terminology that's been used by prosecutors within the Department of Justice, OSI, including John Loftus. He has used that language to describe CIA support activities for terrorist operations. And that is exactly what Ms. Steinem did in 1962, bringing in the DRE operatives. She is indifferently culpable to state-sponsored terrorist activities against another sovereign nation. And that is, in fact, what she did in 1962.
And, of course, all of this is in the context of Steinem working for the Mexico City, I think it was Moss Witten, and then in turn, or maybe William F. Buckley, and in turn, Moss Witten at the time of the in this period, the early 1960s. So she is working for the same milieu that was involved with a key aspect of painting Oswald red.
Well, correct. That is a very disturbing parallel that Gloria Steinem herself, when she graduated from college, was a UPI feeler in the Mexico City station, and was in fact filtering CIA approved stories through the Mexico City station. And by all accounts, when she graduated from Smith College and started working for the Mexico CIA station, once again as a representative of the Student Research Association, it appears that the chief of propaganda activities for the CIA station in 1956, when she graduated from college, from Smith College, was William F. Buckley.
E. Howard Hunt that was over Buckley.
And correct, E. Howard Hunt, Everett Howard Hunt, was the Office of Policy Coordination's chief of paramilitary and psychological warfare in the Mexico City station in 1956. Incidentally enough, E. Howard Hunt had just come off of a 3-year stint as the chief of covert action in Tokyo, Japan, for CIA Japanese operations.
And so in future broadcasts, one of the things that I want to set forth for the audience, and that is how people like Spaz Reagan were also linked to Syngman Rhee, to people in Korea and talking about people like General Arisu, the drawing of the delineation between North and South Korea in 1945 by someone named Colonel David Dean Rusk. And a name that resonates throughout history. So
I'm so glad you brought up Dean Rusk, if I may interrupt real quick, because David Dean Rusk was in 1951 the first president of a Rockefeller Institution funded organization called the Asia Foundation, which in fact was a sister organization to the European Crusade for Freedom, okay, which was a CIA paramilitary psychological warfare front. Now, what's so interesting about Steinem's connections to the CIA in Mexico is that she spent 2 years in India as a CIA representative on a grant from David Dean Rusk, Asia Foundation. She was a Chester Bowles Asian Fellow, serving as a representative of the Independent Research Service under the Asia Foundation. So she was, in fact, as early as 1955, a full-fledged CIA representative of David Dean Rusk's Asia Foundation in India.
So her pedigree is a fairly solid one from roughly the mid-1950s. I think she graduated college in 56, right on up through the early 60s.
Correct. And we have to appreciate that E. Howard Hunt, as the commander of Japanese Office of Policy Coordination Operations out of Tokyo, oversaw a covert action staff that received the CIA designator BG Samurai. That is all one word. Capital BG, capital letter S, the word Samurai. So BG Samurai. And in effect, that was the paramilitary and psychological warfare staff of the CIA's operations penetrating Chinese and Indian intelligence. So one has to question whether or not Gloria Steinem was a long-range surveillance operative for the CIA's Tokyo staff under E. Howard Hunt as early as 1956. I realize that I'm delving into the area of conjecture, but it would stand to reason that her operations in India as a member of the Chester Bowles Asia Fellow and the Independent Research Service under the Asia Foundation, that would have had CIA sponsorship. And just consider what she is doing in Vienna in 1959, and of course in Helsinki in 1962 with DRE terrorists, okay? And in this time period in 1962, E. Howard Hunt was the chief of covert action for a branch of the CIA called the Domestic Operations Division that was overseen by Charles Tracy Barnes. And if I may bring this loop back to Asian operations, in 1952, at the height of the Korean War, Charles Tracy Barnes was the commander of the Psychological Strategy Board's paramilitary and psychological warfare staff, and he oversaw all covert action against China and North Korea during the Korean War. So once again, the commander of domestic CIA operations, the Domestic Operations Division operations in 1962, when Gloria Steinem's DRE operatives are penetrating into Helsinki, formerly was the chief of Stay Behind Ratline operations in North Korea and in China. And that is Charles Tracy Barnes, whose deputy in 1962 was E. Howard Hunt. Okay.
Now, Tracy Barnes was, we'll go back in the future program to his participation in Operation Sunrise. He also was an operative, was he not, in PB Success, the Guatemala invasion, a Guatemalan coup, I should say.
Correct. Charles Tracy Barnes was deputy administrator for covert action for the Psychological Strategy Board's operations in the Guatemalan coup. And his deputy, incidentally enough, was a colonel by the name, United States Army colonel by the name of Albert Haney. And Haney, during the Korean War, was the CIA station chief in Seoul, South Korea. So consider that, you know, for a moment, that Haney was literally plucked out of South Korean operations into the Guatemalan effort, and Charles Tracy Barnes was the commander of all paramilitary and psy warfare activity in North Korea during the Korean War. So he essentially just plucked somebody out of South Korean intelligence right into Guatemalan operations. Yes, you are correct.
We're almost out of time in this program. One of the points that I want to emphasize to people, and that is, and maybe this will appear corny because I've said it before, but the sweep of history, because so many of the things that we are presented by our media and by the intellectual powers that be in this country, they are, again, like shards of a broken mirror or a window or something. They're, you know, a piece that is separate from the whole from which that piece was taken. And what you're doing is presenting to us the picture as a whole, the mirror or the window that was broken and in which those shards fitted. And that is hopefully helping us to better understand the world that we are living in. And on our next program, we're going to talk more about how things as seemingly far afield as the DRE, the anti-Castro effort, the elements of the women's movement, how these things fit into the mirror or window that was deliberately broken apart for us and presented as something we don't have to worry about. This concludes, for the record, program number 1335, Conversations with Monty. This is conversation number 9. This is being presented or being recorded on July 13th of the year 2024. For Monty, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.